Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network.
And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good night. Bob, did we lose you?
Since its inception in 1869, we cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. And you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Clark. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Bob, happy to be back. Sorry, a little technical error there a little bit ago, but always good to be back on the show with you, my friend. Love talking ball with you.
We're back for another show, and we're going to talk a little bit about, before our guest gets here, the massive, incredible auctions that are taking place right now. And as a slight introduction to this whole talk about auctions, on VFC, I think it was last week, I know Jeff Payne brought up that there are some incredible fall auctions that are taking place right now. And I made the comment talking to two longtime collectors. One is a general sports memorabilia collector. The other one is a football memorabilia collector. And they both commented to me and they said, you know, is this for real? Are these prices that we're seeing for real, number one? And number two, you know, is it time for, you know, for me to start selling off my collection? And you know, you hear the old stories, the family's not interested, the person doesn't have anybody to hand the collection down to, the sons or daughters or grandchildren have no interest in it, so on and so forth. And I have always said that at some point football cards and memorabilia would be recognized in the marketplace. And in doing so, I really think we need to give proper credit, proper pedigree, proper lineage of the collections that are coming to the market, especially when it comes to football. Baseball, we know who the big baseball card and memorabilia collectors were and always have been. Football, we're getting used to seeing some new names, some other people, so on and so forth. And I said, you know, it's important. If your collection is going to go to the market, it needs some pedigree. This was, you know, Joe Smith's collection, which was acquired, collected over a 50-year period, so on and so forth. And I think that will help in the long run, the maintaining of values and the maintaining of our hobby. And if anything, this fall is showing these different types of auctions taking place and is showing the strength of the hobby. And with that, I'm going to hand off to you, Joe, and let's start talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great way to segue into that. I mean, it might be Thanksgiving coming up, but it was Christmas. It seemed like Christmas when I got all these catalogs and all these auctions opened up. Seriously, it just stacks them. Just, as I've said before, I love a good auction. I love seeing product coming to the market and just picking and choosing and just seeing new prices hit. It's so healthy for our hobby, and as you mentioned, just, you know, incredible, you know, things coming up. It's cool. Got my love of the game auctions, auction catalog in the mail today. It's always got to be weird just the timing of getting these out the door. Man, I don't know about you guys, but this catalog smells good. I open it up and just the smell of fresh ink wafting over the office. Thank you, Al, who was on the show a couple shows ago to talk about his upcoming auction. His auction is off running strong. Obviously, the coveted Gridiron Great podcast bump to his auction. Things are going well.
Sure.
Catalog sitting here with Jim Thorpe slumming it as a baseball player on the front cover. One of the things Al talked about, he had a type one photo of playing for the, you know, for the New York Giants back when they were in New York, you know, on a beautiful photo. But some incredible unopened, some incredible things coming up. And let's take them in the order that they're closing here. REA, just an incredible run of unopened wax, graded wax packs, starting with 55 Bowman, 57, 60, 61, 62 Fleer, 63 Fleer, Philadelphia, 66 tops. They skipped the 65 tops, Bob. Sorry, you're missing out on a tall boy wax pack.
I saw that.
Yeah, 67.
Look at
I mean, if
price. Look at the price of the 67 Philly pack. I think it was 1,100 and change.
2,000 right now. Yeah. PSA 9, though. I mean, if this same thing is in PSA 6, I mean, to me, unopened is unopened. It's like whenever there's an X out box, you know, goes for less, and it's like it's still got 36 wax packs in it. It doesn't matter if there's an X on the front.
Right.
As you mentioned, $2,000, you know, for that. That one leads the pack. 72, if you were ever putting together a run of unopened wax packs and you wanted to take it down in one fell swoop, this is it. 70, it goes all the way up. There's a case of 1983 Topps wax boxes with 20 boxes in it. One of these sold in memory lane about 2 months ago that I had the privilege of picking up. I'm really picking up unopened lately. Give me a year, I'll probably change my mind. But 84 tops, some X-Out boxes, 86. And then new to the market, some 83, 1933 Sports King, Red Grange, and Jim Thorpe in PSA 8. Just an incredible run of unopened, you know, bookended by, you know, two amazing cards, the 33 Sports King. Just absolutely love it. It's just incredible.
My question, and again, this is curiosity on my part, whose collection is it? So obviously if someone doesn't want any notoriety of their collection, they're going to remain anonymous. But again, the pedigree of what we're seeing in this unopened is just incredible. And again, it's got to be a longtime collector and or it could be a speculator who, you know, picked up all these items and now they're saying, hey, now it's time to sell. I'm going to make some cash on it, and that's it. You know, I don't know which way it is. I don't know which way it's going. And it is what it is, and that's it.
I like to think between you and the members on VFC that we pretty much know every single football collector out there, but we know there's still plenty out there.
Oh, right. By all means, I would, you know, venture to say we are literally probably less than half of all the major collectors within the hobby, one way or the other. But anyway, I'm just blown away by the prices we're seeing. especially for an open material, and the prices we're seeing on graded stuff at the same time. That's amazing. Got 55 All-American in there. That's an incredible price. I can only imagine what it's going to end up going for.
Yeah, the 55 All-American, which or 55 Bowman, you mean?
I thought there was a 55 All-American in that one. I could be wrong. I've been looking at stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. And also, I'm sitting here, I have my Love of the Games and my Huggins and Scott auction sitting on my desk, and there's a real good scent of ink. So if I misunderstood you, it might be the ink high.
Yeah. I'm going to try to find it real quick right now, but keep going on what else
memory
you were saying in the other auction.
Memory lane, again, leads things off with a 33 Sports King Thorpe and Grange PSAA, and beautiful. Their Grange is really nicely centered, really well done. They have an Uncle Nagurski PSA 6. It's a little OC. The right border is, almost non-existent. But PSA 6, 1935 Bronco Nagurski, running at close to 30,000 right now, 29,482. With VIG, that'll be $36,000 for PSA 6. John Spano on VFC mentioned the other day, used to have how much per grade of a Nagurski, and so did I. It was like $1,000 per grade up into PSA 4, then it hockey sticked. This is an unheard of price. I mean, a PSA 7, 3 or 4 years ago was $20,000. Now a PSA 6 is, 50% of that, 150% of that. They have some really nice run of chickles, including a Dutch Clark and a Ken Strong and PSA 8, a beautiful Bull Tosi that's a PSA 7 that's really nicely centered. Another 55 Bowman pack that looks a little dirty. And then something I've really, really wanted to add to my collection, 76 Tops wax box with 36 packs.
Okay.
I've got 77, 78, all the way up to 88, but I'm 76 would be pretty much the only other wax box I'd like to add. And a lot of unopened. Some 79, some 76 fellow. Second series of 72, which is the coveted series, so that should have some fireworks there. But really nice example of some football stuff. Moving on to Love of the Games, whose catalog is sitting right in front of me. As mentioned, a Type 1 photo with Jim Thorpe slumming it as a baseball player. I just feel bad, and obviously Jim Thorpe came to his senses. He came back to Canton, a little later as a Bulldog and wrapped up his career, but feel bad that he had to slum it as a baseball player for a little while. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, but one of the first programs ever that you'll love, 1921 program between the Chicago Staleys, who later became the Chicago Bears, and the Green Bay Packers. This is the first Bears-Packer game, the Green Bay Packers' first season, and it's against the Chicago Staleys.
Right.
This program is just steeped in history. It's pretty cool. I don't know it doesn't say how many pages it is, but I'm guessing it's not that many. And it's got
four.
I believe you're right. It's got George Halas listed as a player coach. Lacing him up, and it only shows three pages as a photo. But, I mean, it's like you said, it could be about three, but incredible piece.
The historical the historical significance of those programs is just amazing. And to go back to what I originally said at the beginning of our discussion, I'm really wondering if this is now going to be the turning point for paper memorabilia for football. And not just programs, but also all points of paper. Again, not programs, but everything else that goes into that category is now the time where it's going to start to really take off. That's my real wonder of what's going on in the market.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
interesting. I absolutely love it. Another auction, Mile High, just opened.
Yep.
They opened yesterday, and I was really looking forward to this because Mile High has a propensity of just grabbing really good, you know, esoteric football stuff. There's usually just one or two things in there that you're like, where the hell did they get that? And I would give this a D-, and it should be an F. Their leadoff football item is a PSA 4, 1957 Topps Johnny U. They have, and
wow.
I've always referred to some of these auctions as eBay-esque. And I love you, Hogginson Scott, but or Mile High, excuse me, but you should have handed this stuff off to Probe Scene or something. They have a 1983 Topps football cello pack. That starting bid is $50. I mean, these are eBay-esque things. At some point, they're tarnishing the image from Mile High, but I love it. And
the argument he could be, you know, saying he wants to get people involved in his auction, so he's going to offer some lower priced items to get them into the auction, and maybe down the road they'll become attracted and can possibly afford greater items in his auctions.
Sure.
So maybe that's the reasoning behind it. I really don't know. I mean, again, but I do kind of agree with you. You know, you don't want to, if you want to make, you know, do something spectacular, it's not a PSA 4 Unitas rookie card. You know, there's plenty of those out there, I'm sure. You know,
and that's above my pay grade is what they take and what dilutes. But I mean, I remember I consigned some stuff to Leland's a couple years ago and, you know, sent them like 10 things. And they're like, well, you know, we'll take these 8 things, but the other 2 things are below our minimum threshold of $1,000 each.
Right.
We'll put them in our auction because you have other things. Remember, I was like, wow, I didn't know they had a $1,000 minimum. They're trying to be known as a really high end thing, and if you start diluting it, then so be it. But
exactly.
Huggins and Scott, Huggins and Scott, which is usually also good for one or two really cool things. I got my partial uncut 1957 sheet from Huggins and Scott, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So I constantly expect to open their catalog up and just to see something that is like, wow. And so I'm just thumbing through it for the first time, and I'm not seeing much in here. There's a Steve Largent card, so obviously that is the kind of attraction that you're after to your auction.
Yeah, Higgins and Scott, I have not looked at what they've had. I've only looked at Al's, and I've looked at Brian's and REA, and that's it. And I can't find that. I thought I saw a 55 All-American somewhere. And I have no clue where I saw it now. So it wasn't in
nice.
REA. I thought it was. But I'll find it eventually.
That'd be really nice.
But
yeah.
It's an amazing, let's call it probably 5-6 different auction houses coming up within a 30-day period and with what they have.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It'll be very interesting to see where all the prices go. I think both of our estimates for wax and unopened boxes and the like are going to be through the roof one way or the other.
Absolutely.
Because that material obviously is so red hot right now, it's not even funny. And the higher grade PSA 9s and 10s are going to be gold also at the same time in the market. So, it's a healthy market, and I hope it can maintain it, and I think it will. And again, I'm just wondering where all this stuff is coming from, and it's obviously going to find new homes, and obviously it's going to be interesting to see how high prices can be maintained in both the short run and the long run for the market. But it's about time. Football memorabilia and football cards really deserved a lot of respect, and in the past 10 years or so, I can really see a different market than it was in the 80s and the early 90s. It's amazing to me. It's really amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, our special guest is here, and I'd like to introduce him and get started with our next section of our show. Our special guest currently resides in West Springfield, Massachusetts, with his girlfriend and his 6-year-old twin boys. He's an engineer working for Collins Aerospace and has been in the aerospace and manufacturing industry for 15 years. He's been a New York Giants fan all his life and was an avid sports card collector during his youth. He got back into collecting about 10 years ago, focusing primarily on the New York Giants football cards and memorabilia. I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Eric Megden. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. How are you, Joe? How are you doing?
Well, thank you for asking, Eric. That's very gracious of you. Most guests don't bother.
Eric, I want to lead off and ask you, tell our audience how you started collecting football cards and memorabilia.
Oh, God. We're going to go ways back. I was probably about 7 or 8 years old when I finally got my first, at that time, baseball cards. And I, if I remember correctly, it was one of those gifts that you get in your Easter basket. So between that and getting, you know, packs of cards and cello packs at the grocery store after that, it just kind of blew up from there as a child and went all the way up into my teens. In my youth, I collected everything, baseball, football, basketball. Yeah, I know.
No, I apologize. I didn't mean that as a... No, I was saying, agreeing with you. Absolutely. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I stopped collecting about 1994. It was about the time I was about a sophomore in high school, and other interests were cropping up at that time. And then life happened, and it was probably about 10 years ago or so, probably a little bit longer now, actually. About the time the Giants were actually in the playoffs, they were en route to their second Super Bowl against the Patriots, and I was in the midst of going through all my old storage and consolidating stuff, and I found all of my old sports cards, and I just happened to start flipping through them, and, well, as they say, the pilot light was lit.
Right. You know,
so,
Eric, most of us follow kind of that same thing. Started collecting as a kid. At some point, discover girls, stop collecting, and at some point, you know, in your mid-20s or whatever, something sparks you and you rediscover it. It's always that spark that I'm interested in. I love that.
I love it too, and I'm glad it happened because later on in life, you know, things settled out. You know, as you know, typically when you're older, the funds are a little more plentiful than when you were a kid, and you can splurge on the things that you really want. So it worked out. And it has worked out very well for my collection and myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I love your collection. You've spoken about it. You posted some pictures up on the BFC, you know, about your, you know, you very specific New York Giants football, you know, collector. Tell our audience about a few of the items in your collection.
It's pretty eclectic. The bulk of my collection is cards. So my card collection ranges from 1935 Chickle New York Giants all the way up to 2020 modern-day cards. My goal has been to assemble team sets of the New York Giants from 1935 all the way up through for the major card manufacturers, be it Chickle, Bowman, Fleer, Topps. But the modern-day cars are a little harder. I don't focus too much on that. I have plenty of them, but it's the vintage cards that I primarily go for the sets on. I have autographs, Type 1 autographs of various players, autograph pictures from meet-and-greets and others that I've procured over the years, various periodicals from larger games that the Giants have been in, Super Bowls, championship games, you know, bad ones as far as, you know, the Giants are concerned, you know, such as when the Eagles get a fumble return and bring it back for a touchdown. A lot of books that revolve around the Giants: Sam Huff, Frank Gifford, Charlie Connerly. I have all of the Super Bowl programs for the Giants, even that nasty one back in 2000 when they lost to the Ravens, but I had to have it. The other ones that I have Shell oil prints of the 1960 team, the 1981 team, from 1948 to 52 exhibits, which still needs to be completed. The Shell oil prints from 1981 it's probably one of my favorite sets because it just happens to be LT's pre-rookie in 81, and they have a print of him, so I really enjoy that set. So yeah, my collection is pretty well-rounded. I even have numerous footballs that are autographed by many New York Giants players over the years, primarily from the 80s, 90s, and modern day.
Outstanding.
Eric, I gotta ask you two questions to interject you about what you're talking about. Do you feel, and I know I've talked to several collectors about this, they really have been, when Topps stopped printing in 2015, they ended their run. They just said, that's it. We're not going to do anything. The thriller's gone as far as still collecting Topps, keeping it going. I'm just curious what your thoughts are with regards to that. And then when you're done with that, I'm going to make a comment on the Shell posters.
So plain and simple, it broke my heart. To me, that was, they were still the last true classic name, to me at least, in the business and for collecting. I really do miss the name and the product. Yeah. People say they were antiquated, they were behind the times, they always tried to play catch-up, but for me, it was basic, it was simple, I enjoyed collecting their sets, even the Topps Chrome, you know, in the more modern time with them, I enjoyed it. The more modern cards, I do collect them, I don't go out of my way to collect them. The luster, like you, faded in 2015 with me.
Yeah, Bob and I have talked about this, you know, cue the, you know, old man get off my porch, you know, theme here. But, I mean, it's, you know, we know what the Steve Largent rookie card is. But now all of a sudden you're like, well, you know, who's, who's a modern quarterback's rookie card? Is it the Topps Chrome Refractor Orange and Topps Chrome Double Pull? You know, gifted, you know, I don't know. It's just there's, you know, 300 to 1,000 rookie cards, you know, to choose from. It's just they really diluted it. And, you said Topps might have fallen behind, but I think everybody else just kind of swung for the fences and Topps stayed to the basics.
And I respected that. I think many of us did. You know, I don't need 60 different variations of one card. The hardest set for me to put together was a standard 700 card 1991 Upper Deck high and low set. I don't need 2,000 cards to put together a set.
I hear what you're saying. And a lot, like I said, a lot of collectors just said 2015, that was a, and you know, for me, it basically was. The only good thing about Packers stuff is they still have the police set that they issue once a year. So I could say I can justify collecting the police set because at least it's a manageable set, 12 or 15 cards in it, or 20 cards. And you got all the players from the team, pretty much, you know, the starters, and that's it. You know, it's fine. The other comment I want to make on the Shell posters, 1981, if you did go to a Shell station in the tri-state area and in the tri-state area, you did get either a Giant poster or a Jets poster for Phillips or whatever the deal was. And I can still remember the local Shell station in North Branford, Connecticut, where I grew up in. He had a bunch of them, and I remember bugging him, you know, if I could buy them or whatever. And he always said, well, I got to hand them out. So he said, you know, come at the end of the week. If I got any extras, I'll give you a few extras, and that's it. So I bugged him for it. But it was funny. He only had the Jets ones. He never got any of the Giant ones. Fast forward to probably the early 90s. I'm at a show. A guy literally had a box of them, and he had the Jets in them, and he had the Giants in them. And then he said, you know, he wanted to blow them out. So whatever I paid for it type of thing. And there was probably a couple hundred of them. But it was amazing to see the correlation. I ended up with like 50 of one player and then only 10 of the other player type of thing. So it was very interesting. But that's a nice set to collect. It's very very frameable, and it's very nice to look at and view, to say the least.
It is. I enjoy that set. The 1960 set is just as nice, and some big names in that
right.
set as
yep.
well.
Yeah, the Shel Reger set. It was beautifully drawn, and all classic vintage players on it at the same time. That's a great
yep.
set also. So that's great. Continuing with your collection, could you describe to our audience what are the five top items in your collection, and try to describe them the best you can?
Sure. Probably the first one would be my 1995 New York Giants autograph football. There's roughly 40 autographs on it. It has Dan Reeves when he was the head coach on it, Steve DeBerg when he was the quarterback coach for the Giants, third year Michael Strahan, Hall of Famer on it, and to top it all off, it has a very rare general manager George Young autograph on it. So I've actually tried to find George Young autographs, and they are hard to come by, and you know, they command a pretty good price. I happened to get the ball for $19.
Wow.
Yeah. I couldn't complain. So I got some Hall of Famers on that ball, and that one is displayed very well in the house.
That's cool.
Yep. My next one would probably be my 1930 Type 1 autographed portrait of Mel Hine. That's a very, very nice, clean picture. Whoever had it before me preserved it. There, no waves, no wrinkles. The corners are as sharp as can be. It has a gorgeous autograph on the back of it. He signed it Mel Hine, Washington State, and I'm assuming it was just before he was drafted by the Giants in the same year. I actually picked that up from an auction a couple years ago, and that's displayed as well, very prominently. I know it's not a big deal, but to me it was, because I wanted to try and find a very good example, but it was my 1948 Bowman Charlie Connerly rookie card. And I found a very nice example of that back in September, actually. It's been an ongoing process. I had that whole set put together for a very long time, and that was the last card that I needed in the condition that I wanted and for the amount that I wanted to pay for it. And I finally scored one this past September. So now
love
I can
that
say
one.
That the 48, yeah, I do too. And I can say that the 48 Bowman New York Giants set is finally complete.
Nice.
The next one, newer endeavor of mine is factory sets. And I'm very proud of my 1969 top set. I went for a set that was in excellent or better condition, and that's what this set is. It is almost done. There are five cards left on it, but I am very proud of that set. The only five that are left on it are Brian Piccolo, Gale Sayers, Dick Butkus, Larry Zonka, and one of the checklists. Who would have thought checklists would become so expensive and scarce?
They're tough.
And last but not least is definitely my 82 Tops LT rookie card that I had personally autographed.
Okay.
No up. Cool.
I always wanted to meet that man. I watched that whole man's career, loved watching him, and I finally got to meet him and have him sign that card.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Okay,
that is cool. That was really cool.
Our next question is, you know, you've got to have some hobby stories, and I'm going to, you know, between, you know, that and how you found that, you know, that, you know, that, you know, that autographed, you know, team photo, you know, I'd love to hear the story. I mean, LT is, you know, always top three of the greatest NFL players ever. I think he was he number one or number two in the, and then, you know, 100, you know,
top 100,
top
he was 100. Number three.
He was number three?
Yep.
Okay.
Number three, yep.
Yeah. So, all right, what do you got?
So, I guess I'll just stick with that card. It was actually back in 2019. I was planning on going to the Greater Boston Sports Collector Show out in Wilmington, Mass. And I would check periodically to see who was coming as, you know, guests for autographs and whatnot. So it's kind of funny. It actually turned out being a bigger show. I saw Mark Bavaro was coming, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go see Mark Bavaro and whatnot. And Joe Montana was actually going to be at that show as well, and he was. So I made plans to see Mark Bavaro and just kept on checking periodically to see if anything changed. And it was probably about four or five weeks before the show was scheduled to be on, and LT's name popped up. Yeah, my heart started racing, and I think I screamed at my laptop, but I made plans to go on a different day to make sure I was there. I immediately went on and bought the ticket to get the autograph. Then I went into my collection and picked out the best unslabbed 82 rookie card I could find. And then I proceeded to go to the show, and, you know, they called everyone up to the line. I was shaking. I'm not going to lie. I was like an eight-year-old little boy. I'm ashamed to admit it, but, yeah, I was shaking in line. My heart was pounding. You know, I'm finally going to meet my favorite player from my favorite team from my childhood, and I'm 41 years old standing in line shaking. So I finally get up there, and I say, hello, Mr. Taylor. It's a pleasure to meet you, or actually to finally meet you. You were my favorite player growing up, such and such, and I've always wanted to meet you. He said something along the lines of, it's a pleasure to meet you, and, you know, he was happy that I finally got to meet him. He signed my card, and he shook my hand. I walked away with probably a giant grin on my face, and I actually had to go sit down because my heart was beating so fast. And I just looked at the card. I was just in shock. You know, over 30 years had passed, and I had finally gotten to meet LT, and he signed my rookie card of him, and I was just in awe. So after that, I went to another booth and had it submitted to get it slabbed and preserved, and that's where it sits in display right now.
The same? That's the same show you went and had it slabbed?
Yep. Yep.
Did they ask the provenance of it?
What's that?
Did they ask the provenance of it? Did they ever question it? Or, I mean, did you have a picture?
Do I have a picture of it?
Oh, when you go to get it slabbed, did they ask the provenance, like, hey, how do we know this is legit? Did you have a picture taken while you're going to sign?
They were actually giving discounts if you got autographs at the show, so it worked out well. So they knew pretty much where it came from. So I had that done, and I had it submitted, and I still remember shaking that man's hand. Yeah, he and I are roughly the same size on paper, but now I can see how he could easily manhandle offensive linemen, because that man's hands felt like I was shaking a catcher's mitt.
Yeah. I've heard that before, that his hands are huge, and I can only imagine shaking his hand. Must have been incredible.
It was just an experience. You know, not much to many people, but to me, you know, that's all I ever wanted to do as a child, and I finally got to do it later on in life.
That's cool.
Great.
So, what else that's you got? Really any cool. other good stories? Or that one I love. When you get to meet the hero, your childhood hero, that's cool.
So that football, I actually I was on eBay just perusing around for Giants autographs, and it just came up in the search. It had a starting bid of 15-something, and there were no bids on it. No one was watching it, so I put it in my watch bin. It was probably 5 or 6 days left, and I just kept on looking, and I did a bunch of research while it was in my car. I looked up every player's name, number. I looked up examples of all the different how they were signed. I actually found out that Michael Strahan's autograph has evolved over the past 25 years. So it's got his original style autograph on the ball. I was looking, you know, trying to find, you know, number 31. It just happens to be it was Jason Seahorn's. You know, I'm looking for Tommy Maddox is actually on the ball as well. So I did a bunch of research to just confirm all of these autographs before I, you know, spent the $15. Oh, my God, what a huge amount of money. So I put a bid in, and I just happened to win the ball. And I got it shipped. It's all in different Sharpies. I spoke to the person that was selling it, and it was throughout the course of the 1995 season. He had season tickets, and he would take the ball with him to the various games, and he would have it signed here, there, or at different functions. The ball came out of New Jersey, and he actually had a couple pictures of him with the players and the ball in his hand. And I was like, okay, this seems pretty legit. And sure enough, I actually took it to JSA to have it authenticated, and it came back positive for everything.
Wow.
So I can't complain. The biggest thing was the George Young autograph. I was more ecstatic about that even over the Michael Strahan autograph.
That's
wow.
pretty cool.
Wow.
I always like that. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. It's where you happen to be looking. You know, you got to be diligent about your searches.
Yes, you do.
I search for uncut sheets every week, and one time I forgot to look, and the sheet that I was looking for went that one week. I just remember, like, all right, got to get better about this.
That's great. Great. Eric, you're collecting vintage football sets now. Tell us a little bit about that.
I actually just wanted to venture into something a little different, kind of break away from the Giants. I remembered as a kid that I liked putting the sets together and comparing all the different players and the stats. I liked looking for the rookie cards as a kid and seeing the All-Pro logos on the cards. And, you know, at that time, in the 80s, you know, insert cards at that time were 1,000-yard club cards. So I enjoyed the simplicity of it. So I started off and said, I'm going to do two sets. And I started off with 1982, of course, being the rookie year of Lawrence Taylor, and 1978, which sounds cheesy, but it's my birth year, so I just went for those two. You know, it's progressed intensely. So now I'm going from 1977 to 83 and 1987 to 91 with a couple 93s mixed in there. And also ventured into 1969 and 1959. And the 1969 set, like I mentioned earlier, I'm very proud of that set with only 5 cards left. But more amazingly, I only have 5 cards left for the 1959 set as well. I didn't realize how fast I put that set together.
Now, did you when you were collecting the 59 set, did you get a good mix of both series, or did you see that there were more of the first series out than the second, or vice versa, or you really didn't notice? I'm just curious about that.
So, it seems funny. It seems like I put the second half of that set together faster.
Sure.
But then I look at I look at the 69 set, and the first set went together faster.
Okay. All right. Because I was going to comment, over the years and all the years I've been collecting, I have seen more high series 59s literally for 35 years now compared to the lower series, series 1. And when I put that set together way back when, back in the 80s, I had the second series completely done, and I was searching forever for the first series. And it was probably not until like 88 or 89 I finally finished that set. And they were the first series, for whatever reason, were very, very difficult to find. I was just curious about that because a lot of people say the same thing. They finished the second series before they did the first series, which is pretty interesting.
Yep. And even still, of the five that I need, three of the five are low series.
I figured that.
And then for the 69 set, three of the five are high series that I need.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That makes sense.
But, I just thought it was something different, and I enjoyed it, you know, seeing all the different cards and comparing all the different players and all the different Hall of Famers. It kind of helps having some of the big names already in your boxes, being a Giants fan.
Yeah.
You know, 59 was, you know, wasn't too bad when you already got a 59 Huff rookie card sitting around.
You seem to have such a good blend of vintage, you know, and modern. I mean, you talk about it pretty seamlessly. I mean, like, who are your top three favorite players? And, I mean, like, do you go all the way back, like, a Hat Moran, you know, Ken Strong, and, you know, or and LT's got to make that list. I mean, yeah, who are your top players?
LT's on that list. Sam Huff is on that list. And just for what he was able to do later on in life and you know, being a war vet and whatnot, is Charlie Connerly.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, he was a war vet. He missed out on a few years. You know, he came into the league, and, you know, at first he didn't have the best of teams around him, and he made things work. You know, then they started piecing things together in 52 with Gifford, and Robustelli came in later on, Sam Huff, and that team really started taking off in the late 50s. But, yeah, it's definitely LT in there, Sam Huff and Connerly, modern day. I'm not going to lie, I'm a Strahan fan. I'm an Eli fan, you know. Yeah, I'm big on the players that less talky, more worky, you know. And, one thing that kind of, you know, it didn't really deter me, but, you know, LT was in the news, and we all know that. But there was no denying what that man could do on the field.
Oh, yeah. So... All right, well, what's on your wants list right now? What are you searching for? You know, we were talking about auction houses before. What do you hope to see in an auction house? What do you scour eBay for?
Well, right now, I am still looking for a 1935 Chickle Dale Burnett and John Del Iola card. Those two are evading me. And
you looking for them in a particular grade or?
No. No, I'm actually, I'd be happy with lower grades, but even the lower grades they're going for a pretty penny. So it's just one of those things where I just got to catch that at the right time. I actually have one in my cart right now, and I'm hoping, you know, the sale goes through to finally complete my 51 Bowman set is Tom Landry's rookie card.
Okay.
So that one there, the two Chickles. And various cards for the factory sets that I'm still looking for. But those two are on the top of my list. And one thing that I've always wanted but can't seem to find is a white nighttime ball from a Giants game.
Those are tough.
From the 50s. They are tough.
Those are really tough.
Except I
really
actually
tough.
Just found one. I actually just found one yesterday. Love of the Game has one. Yep, Love of the Game has one. 1959 New York Giants team signed football.
Outstanding. Look at that. The gridiron bump coming through again, Bob.
So I just don't know. I don't know how far I'm willing to pay for it, but it's there.
There you go.
Well, we can.
Interesting.
Off the show, the three of us can discuss it. We'll give you some pointers about it. But to me, white game balls are brutal. Brutal. Over the years, I've seen very few, and I've had people, if I knew anybody, blah, 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 for specific teams, so on and so forth. But they're very tough.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Cool.
It means they would be great.
Getting back to what you're saying about the 35 shekels, and Joe and I talked really briefly before when we were talking about prices. I really am astounded at the prices of 35 shekels right now. I'm literally shocked at what I'm seeing. You're going from, 25 years ago, where you could still pick up commons in lesser grade very, very reasonably priced. I can see 35 shekels in any grade starting to go for $100 plus, even if they're in fair to poor condition. And the high numbers probably, $500-$600. That's my honest opinion where they're going to be going. There's such a demand for them right now. It's amazing to me. So, I don't know. That's just me. That's my opinion on it. But I just see the price is going crazy on that stuff.
You're not wrong. So I have one up and I'm looking at it. 2 years ago, it probably would have been half of what I'm looking at for a price right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can still, I can date myself, but I distinctly remember the first 35 shekel card I ever bought was at a show in Connecticut. And it had to have been 1987, 1986. And I paid a whopping $20 for a Ken Strong card because he was a Giant at the time. And I was floored that I pulled the $20 bill out of my wallet, but I always wanted a 35 shekel. And I started and stopped that set numerous times, as everyone knows, and I sold everything off over the years. I am just shocked at where the prices have gone on that. That's amazing. Truly amazing.
That was my first chickle. Ken Strong.
Well,
I'm just glad I have him now before the prices went up.
Yeah, great one.
Yeah.
I got to ask a true Giants fan, what are your thoughts of Eli Manning? Because if you think about what, Eli winning two Super Bowls during his time, and it wasn't just any two Super Bowls. When you think about the greatest quarterback to ever lace him up, it's Tom Brady. I don't think there's any question about that. Tom Brady's two Super Bowl losses came from Eli Manning in 2008, 2012. I mean, so Eli could be, the Dragon Slayer, basically. He's the only guy to ever beat, Tom Brady in a Super Bowl.
Twice.
Twice. What's his legacy come down to? How do Giants fans think of him?
So, most Giants fans will tell you right now that he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I am biased. I hope that's true. It's unfortunate that, he put up the numbers. He owns every record for the Giants. There's no denying the two Super Bowl wins and the MVPs. It's the record that kills Eli. The lack of offensive line, the lack of weapons, and say whatever you want, but he broke 500 with his record. So that's what they say is going to be the killer of him. As far as I'm concerned, he's got every other accolade, so excuse me. Listen, Joe Namath went into the Hall of Fame with a 500 record, I think. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
That's true.
You know, he kept quiet. He did his job. He did what he had to do. He proved that he could be a quarterback in clutch moments. So I miss Eli today.
I think a lot of people do. To say
yeah,
the least.
No kidding.
A lot of people do.
Okay.
Erica,
like
we're winding down time here. Last question for you. Any advice for a beginning collector in our hobby?
Well, one for me that I realized is I know when I was younger, I wanted everything. You want all the cards, you want all the packs, you want everything. I found that as I've gotten older, it pays off to be more focused. Be focused on what you want to collect. You'll save time, you'll save money. But in the same regard, you know, collect what you love. It doesn't matter what it is, cards, periodicals, or everything for a team. It doesn't matter what it is. Just collect what you love and pursue it, but try and be organized and focused in your pursuits.
That's great advice.
Great advice.
Eric, thank you for being on the show tonight. You got a great collection, and I know you're going to be completing those sets, and you'll find those chickles at a reasonable price at the same time. I'm sure of that. So thanks for being on, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on tonight.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Joe,
thanks,
we're going to go into our two-minute warning. We're down to roughly 2 minutes here. Going to hand off to you. What'd you pick up on tonight's show?
Good guess. I like Eric. Before the show, we were all talking, and as usual, I was making fun of his accent, and he described it as between New York and Boston, and he said, I don't have an accent. I live between New York and Boston. Well, the more I talk to him, the more I'm like, you know what? It's a slight twang, but it's not that much of an accent. He's right. So tip of the hat to the guy who's two cities with big accents.
I was between New York and Boston, too. I never had an accent. I always said I had a Connecticut accent, which was people that spoke normal for crying out loud. I don't want to get a southern accent down here. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, no kidding.
This man,
you have a very
man. Oh man!
I remember the first time we were talking about it, you're like Portland, Oregon, and then we talked about the Mayos, and I think you pronounced the Mayos or something
Mayo.
Like that. I'm like
Mayos.
I'm like, oh boy,
Mayos. Brenda went over to yell at me when I said that. She said, you know, you're mispronouncing it. She said there's hundreds of thousands of people listening, and you're butchering the English language. And I said, okay, I'll change. So I call him Mayo now.
I love
Brendan's
optimism.
If you're not subscribed to Good Angry, if you're not subscribed to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for? Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. And I also point out our next issue is going to be the 75th issue of Gridiron Greats Magazine. A lot of special things coming up in that particular issue. I agree with you. It's great talking to a fellow collector who has a passion about a team, a passion about their collection. It's always great to enjoy. Great advice for a beginning collector at the same time. And, I got to say this. I've had a lot of time to reflect here since I've had so much downtime waiting for this house to be finished, which is still not good. We're still not going to begin until January now. But in any event, I've been thinking about a lot of things, and I just can't believe the ride I've been on for years, talking to people about their collections, viewing collections the way I've seen over the years, writing about this hobby for well over 33 years now. It's just been incredible. It's really been incredible. And I'm really glad football cards and football memorabilia are getting the respect that they're getting. Final thoughts, Joe, 20 seconds.
Happy to be on the show. Thanks as always for organizing, Bob.
You're quite welcome. We'll be back. Everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. We're recording this a couple days before Thanksgiving. And we'll hope we'll be back next week with more shows. Take care.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.